Well, folks, over the past several months, we have visited on this program with many of pop music's biggest and best stars, among them Neil Sedaka, Ronnie Spector, Mike Love, Johnny Crawford, Jack Jones, and on and on. At this moment, we add still another music superstar to our list, Peter Asher. Yes, as we said, is in the Twin Cities for concerts tonight and tomorrow night. He'll be on stage at the Dakota in downtown Minneapolis. Peter first shot to fame as part of the group we just heard, that great duet, the world-renowned British singing duo Peter and Gordon. You know their string of hits. We just heard one. Also, A World Without Love, Woman, I Go to Pieces. Those songs frequently played on this program by request. Peter has stayed as busy as ever in recent years, in the spotlight and behind the scenes. Now, we get to talk about all of that with him. Peter Asher, thank you very much for carving out a few minutes to chat with us this afternoon. Thank you so much. How you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you. What an illustrious list to be on. That's amazing.
Thank you. Our listeners, as all across the globe, love you. And of course, your longtime singing partner, Gordon Waller. And we want to thank you, and we want to thank Gordon, too, for all the wonderful music and enjoyment you two have brought us over the years. Peter Asher, you've been to Minnesota before. I think you were last year, what, in 2012, a couple years ago?
We played here, yeah, we played the Dakota twice before, but always for some reason in the middle of winter. Every time we've been here before, it's been like minus a million degrees, so This is very pleasant.
You're too conservative.
It's delightful to be here in the sunshine.
Minus a million is actually pretty accurate.
Yeah,
it's
close. We dislike the cold as much as you do, Peter. We're stuck here, you're not.
Well, you know, I moved from London to California, so I...
It was a good move. I
trust it's warm where you are. We'll talk about your show set coming up tonight and tomorrow night at Dakota in just a bit, but let's just kind of set the stage. How and where did you and Gordon Waller meet, Peter?
At school. We were both at a school called Westminster School in London, and, you know, we discovered we both played the guitar and sang, and then that was our common interest. I was a bit more of a folky back then. I was singing a lot of Woody Guthrie songs and you know, that kind of thing, and Gordon was into Eddie Cochran and Buddy Holly, and of course Elvis, so we blended our two sets of interests and tried singing together. And of course, where we both agreed was on the magic and wonderment of the Everly Brothers, like every duo in history.
Oh, absolutely, you two played the coffee bars around Britain, didn't you?
We did. We played coffee bars and pubs. I'm glad to say too. we used to be at a pub every lunchtime where we'd get a pint of beer and a pound and a free meal, which is a fantastically good deal.
That is a good deal.
And that kind of thing. Until eventually it was in a sort of more upmarket drinking club in the evening once when we got spotted by an EMI A&R guy, and that's where it all began.
Mm-hmm. Your sister Jane got hooked up with Paul McCartney along the way in the early 1960s.
Correct.
And that's, I suppose, how you came to know Paul and the Beatles.
Yes. Yes, she'd been asked actually by a magazine. You know, she was quite well known at the time. She was and is a successful actress, and she also was on this TV show, Jukebox Jury, quite often, where they, you know, rated the new releases. So she was actually asked by a magazine to go and see this new band. All the fuss was about the Beatles that all the girls were screaming over. And she went down to see them and thought they were terrific and met them all afterwards and liked them. And, one of them liked her in particular, and she ended up going up with Paul for a while.
Peter, is it true that you and Gordon often were given unrecorded Lennon-McCartney songs to perform? Sometimes they thought they maybe weren't even good enough for the Beatles to perform.
Yes, in a way. I mean, what happened was that Paul and I ended up living. Paul moved into the guest room at our parents' house because he was hanging around the house all the time, and our parents offered him the guest room. And so he and I were sharing the top floor of the house, so I had the opportunity of hearing a lot of songs in early stages. And I'd heard this one particular song, World Without Love, which he had told me that the Beatles were not going to record because I think John Lennon wasn't crazy about it at all, thought the lyric was a bit silly. When Paul would sing, "Please lock me away," John would say, "Oh, okay, then the song's over." Anyway, so I knew about this song, and when Gordon and I, as I mentioned, were lucky enough to be spotted by EMI and given finally an audition and then a record deal, when our first session was coming up, I went back to Paul and said, is that Orphan song, which was also unfinished, by the way, didn't have a bridge. Is that song still around? Is anyone doing it? Because I really liked it. And he said, no, you can have it if you want. And so he finally wrote the bridge for us, and we recorded that at our first session. And then the other songs were actually more standard. I mean, people kind of go, oh, how did you get those songs out of the Beatles? It wasn't really that way, because after we'd had a number one record, you know, they knew the songwriter traditions, and one of them is that if you have a big hit, you don't let anybody else write the second single and ride on your coattails, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So when we got back after Well Without Love success, he'd already written Nobody I Know, you know, ready to go. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have to cajole that one out of him. It was given to us in the way songwriters do.
Well, you and Gordon took A World Without Love to number one in this country, and I know it did very well in your home country, too.
Yeah, it was number one all over the place, including the UK and here. So, yeah, it was an amazing beginning. And, of course, that changed my career forever, and I've been doing one thing or another in the music business ever since.
Yeah, that was the launching pad for you. Paul McCartney apparently shopped the song around, A World Without Love. I think he offered it to Billy J. Kramer, who said,
well,
no, I don't
that.
Want that. Huh?
But then Billy J. told me it's not the case.
Really? Really?
So I need to know.
Okay.
So I'm actually not sure.
All right.
Maybe that's a rumor that got around. I don't know who he played it to be honest. I'd heard it was Billy Jay, but when I finally got to ask the man himself, he said, no, that wasn't the case. He'd remember, and he probably would have grabbed the song, so I'm glad he didn't hear it.
Peter Asher, let's talk about another big hit, Woman, 1966. It went to 14 in this country and 28 in the UK, and is it true, you're the truth squad here, is it true that Paul McCartney wrote the song? He did write it, but under a pseudonym, Bernard Webb, to see if the song would be a success without the McCartney
credit. This was after we'd had a few other hits, you know, a couple by him, like Nobody I Know, and some by other people, you know, like I Go to Pieces, which was Del Shannon. But anyway, Paul had written the song and thought it would be right for us. But at the time, some of the press and things were implying, or indeed saying, that everything connected with the Beatles or with Lennon and McCartney would automatically be successful, regardless of whether it was any good.
Mm-hmm.
So when he gave us the song, he asked if we'd mind trying to release it under a pseudonym, and he chose this name, Bernard Webb, or Bernard, as it would be in America.
Right.
We said, fine, you know, actually, that's good for us. You know, we'd rather prove that we don't need the connection as well. We just need the good song. So the deception didn't last very long.
No.
People figured it out. But it lasted 3 or 4 weeks, which is enough time for the record to become a hit. So he made his point and proved that a good song is a good song, regardless of whose name on it.
Yeah, you proved the point, too, you and Gordon, because you took it, as I said, it was a top 20 hit in this country and did pretty well in the UK, too. So
it was one of those interesting ones. We did differently in different places in America. It was huge in Los Angeles, I think, and you know, radio was back then, you know, get certain areas would go crazy and other areas wouldn't care. So
that's right.
It was one of those things.
That's right, absolutely. We're talking with Peter Asher, of course, of Peter and Gordon. Peter is performing tonight live in concert and tomorrow night live in concert. 7 p.m. showtime both nights at the Dakota Club in downtown Minneapolis. Peter, we should talk about Gordon Waller. He passed away about 5 years ago. Tell us about Gordon.
Yeah, and he was of course one of the greatest singers I knew, you know, and he had this big, huge, rich baritone Elvis-y voice. You know, I talk in some respects, some bits of the show I do sort of a tribute to him as well as everything else. Because the show itself it's more than a concert. I tell a lot of stories. I've got a lot of videos. It's a sort of multimedia journey through that era and other eras. But certainly when I'm talking about the 60s and about the Peter and Gordon part of the story, and I then move on to James Taylor and all the other things I've been involved with. But so certainly the Gordon part is in many respects, you know, I owe Gordon for that part. And I think of him fondly. He was a sort of grumpy old man, but a brilliant, amazing singer and a really true friend. He was one of those people who, once you get beneath the grumpy exterior, turns out to have a genuine heart of gold.
What was the root of his grumpiness, Peter? What was it? He was just kind of
He could be grumpy about almost anything.
No. I know people like that.
You name it. You name it, he'd have a complaint.
Did you chaps get on pretty well, though?
We did, actually. I mean, that's the interesting part. People go, when did you and Gordon break up? We actually never did. We drifted into, you know, he wanted to make an album on his own. I'd started producing records and eventually got the job at Apple as head of A&R and then found James and blah, 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 and all this other stuff. So we drifted into a hiatus, which ended up going on for 38 years.
Wow.
And it was actually a friend of mine, Paul Schaefer, who persuaded us to get back together for a benefit for Mike Smith, who you'll remember was the keyboard player in the Dave Clark Five.
Yes.
And
yes.
Mike needed some help, and Paul Schaefer was a friend of his, and you know, called me and said, I want to put together a 60s-themed benefit in New York. What would be the chance of you and Gordon getting back together? And we'd been asked before and never done it. But this one, knowing that it was Paul Schaefer and his great band, and knowing that it was for Mike, who was a dear friend of Gordon's and a wonderful musician, we kind of went, we can't possibly say no. So we said yes. And once we did it, once we rehearsed for quite a while and made sure we could still sound like us, you know, or close enough. And so then we decided, what the hell, that was fun. You know, if we get offered more engagements, we'll do them. So we did. So we did quite a few shows. And of course, I'm very glad we did, you know, since Gordon died and we miss him. And I'm glad that we did get to do a number of shows together in those intervening years.
We are glad you did too, Peter Asher. Peter, by the way, Paul Schaefer, that must be the Letterman show, Schaefer, is that it?
That's the guy.
Yeah,
brilliant keyboard player and a good friend.
From Thunder Bay, Ontario, just up the road here, not too far away. Peter,
I didn't know that.
Yep, Peter, if you don't mind, if we could take a quick commercial break here, we'll come back and talk about your show at the Dakota and many other things.
Of course, whatever you want.
Okay, sir, we'll be back with you in just a minute. Please, everybody, stand by.
Great.
We've all heard the saying that there's no free lunch, but that's not true anymore.
2 hours of your requests and dedications every day from noon till 2 with Stan Turner. Stan's waiting to hear from you at 651-275-1220 or 1-877-646-1220. This is Club 1220, KLBB.
Wouldn't you know it, we're talking live with Peter Asher. Yes, the Peter Asher of Peter and Gordon. You know their songs, you love them. Peter performing tonight and tomorrow night at the Dakota in downtown Minneapolis. Peter, thank you for being with us. I know you've only got a few more minutes with us. Please, if you could, give us a little peek at what you're going to be doing on stage tonight and tomorrow night in Minneapolis, and also about your other show business ventures in recent years and what you're doing right now.
Well, I just got back from New York, actually, a couple of weeks ago from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Awards, which ran on HBO the other night. And that was fun. I was there because they had asked me to induct Brian Epstein and Andrew Oldham, you know, who managed respectively the Beatles and the Stones. So that was an honor. And I wanted to be there anyway because Linda Ronstadt was being inducted, my favorite girl singer and whom I had the great fortune of producing and managing all those many years.
Yes,
you know? So, a lot of things. And then I did this record not long ago with Steve Martin and Edie Brickell, which we actually were fortunate enough to win a Grammy on these last Grammys, and we're turning that into a stage musical, which is going to open in San Diego in September. So luckily, things remain extremely busy. And I talk a bit about all these things in the show. I sort of bring it up to the present day. You know, I did a project recently with Elton John, recutting some of the songs from Goodbye Yellow Brick Road to the 40th anniversary edition. I talk about that stuff. I got to work with Ed Sheeran and Fall Out Boy and Miguel and all these cool artists from today.
Yeah.
And so my show covers, you know, really the changes that have happened from going from the 60s and even a little before up to and including the present day. And as I say, there's a lot of video and photos. And plus, we do indeed sing the old songs. And I make everyone sing along with World Without Love. And there's a big old sing-along. And we have a good time. It's and one of the nice things about playing clubs like the Dakota is, you know, the size of audience, so you can actually hang out and meet people afterwards and have a drink and so on. And I enjoy that part of it very much, too.
You are a wonderful person and performer, Peter. Thank you for being the person you are. I've got to ask you just quickly, because you know Linda Ronstadt so well. She's got serious health problems. Have you talked with her lately or communicated with her lately? How's she doing?
Yes. Yeah, she's okay. I mean, it's a really annoying disease. And of course, for her, the first time was that she couldn't sing properly, which you know, for someone who's such a genius singer is upsetting. But she's a profoundly rational and intelligent woman and is dealing with it. And, you know, and she's holding up just fine. And she's in good spirits.
Well, thank you for telling us that. Your daughter, Victoria, she's still playing with Cobra.
Yes, they haven't been out on the road for a little while. They've been in and out of the studio trying out some ideas for a new album. Mm-hmm. She and Gabe Saporta were in the studio in New York just recently. I went to visit them. So, she's very much still in the band. But one of her other loves has always been movie making. So she works on movies kind of in between, you know, as assisting the director or whatever. She's been very involved in all of that. So she has twin interests. Indeed, she's done some videos for the band. But, yeah, she still is the guitar player in Cobra Starship. Mm-hmm. The question is exactly when Joe Versace are going to finally finish a new album and get out on the road.
Also, in your family, of course, we talked about Jane, and there is Sister Claire, too. Is that right?
Very good, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Claire gets overlooked in all the fast. She's actually the cleverest of all of us. She's the smart one in the family. She was a school teacher for many years, and now she inspects schools and school teachers on behalf of the government.
Peter, I know you've got to get running here in just a minute. Just a couple of final thoughts. What's ahead for you? What's going on?
Well, my main thing now, since I get back to California, is this musical called Bright Star, which is based on some of the songs in the Steve Martin, E.G. Brickell album, Love Has Come For You. We're in the process of putting the band together and auditioning the actors, and I'm music supervisor and producer for the whole thing. So that's going to be pretty much my intense focus from when I get back from this little mini tour to until it opens in September.
Well, Peter, thank you. Thank you so much. You are not only a national treasure for us, but an international one. Thank you for staying on the
road
and continuing to share your considerable talents in front of the camera and behind it. We owe you so much, and I'd give anything to be in the audience tonight and again tomorrow night. It sounds like an absolutely wonderful show.
If any of you get a chance to come, just give us a call and let us know. It'd be great if you could come by.
Thank you so much, Peter Asher. Peter Asher of Peter and Gordon. Peter's got to go off to a meeting now, and we're going to go off to one of Peter and Gordon's big hits. Here it is.